strongly in support of the AMA coalition and their recommendations, which you heard so eloquently from Dr. Haynes and Dr. Bethel. It seems to us at this point that that group has been carrying the water for the community for such a long time that the priority becomes for them to be heard and involved in the solution to this problem. You've heard from many people that, and you've said yourselves, that trust is a central issue here. What I know about trust as a missioner, as a minister, is that when it is broken, the only approach to restore it is to bring people into the conversation. And so I'm strongly affirmative of increasing the seats at the table on what I will continue to call the Oversight Committee, and searching out and reaching out to make sure that a diverse group of voices from the community is present from day one in that construct. The other thing that I am most mindful of is that the protections that have been built into our system for police who are involved in killings have worked extraordinarily well, not only here in Portland, but across the nation. And this community is not the only community which is struggling to understand what real police accountability needs to look like. What I do believe is that it is time for you, the decision makers, to look beyond the specifics, and I know that you have to look at the specifics, to look beyond the specifics, but to try to reach for solutions which will make all of us safer and all of us served better. Because I believe, in fact, that the police who serve us feel more at risk than they were before, just as the community that is being served feels more at risk than it felt before, and many parts of our community have been at risk for a long, long time. So try to look outside the box and begin with as much input from the community as you can manage. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. So I'm a member of First Church, and I'm proud to be. So you have my statement. I sent you an email. And the statement I gave to the clerk is similar. I'm just going to go off script here and give her some notes.
Sorry, can you state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Isabel Sheridan.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
So I'm going to go off script and just talk to you from my heart. I'm here because I've been a teacher in New York City, a very young teacher in Philadelphia suburbs for most of my 30 years. And I taught an awful lot of black children that I came to love, and Puerto Rican children in New York City. And I lived in New York City in the 60s, and I lived in Philadelphia in the 70s through the 90s. And I was there when Rizzo was the police chief in Philadelphia. It wasn't pretty, and we got to community involvement. And it isn't that they've solved their problems, as Reverend Sinkford mentioned. But it's pretty hard to shock me. And when I came here in 2008 as the place of choice to live out the rest of my life, I thought it was, pretty wonderful. And then I started to be shocked by one young, unarmed black youth or young man after another being shot by the police, and there was no response in terms of not even getting knuckles wrapped. It was a shock to me. It continues to be a shock to me. And I think of Eric Randall, I think of Shahee Brown, I think of the other black young males that I taught, and I know they're having really good lives because they didn't get shot. I want to talk about risk. Every death of an unarmed black person in the last 9 years that I've been living here has been a serious incident. It came up as a serious incident in the legal conversation that I listened to for over an hour. that person, his or her family, the larger Black community, and I got to tell you, me in the larger community of white safe people, I'm really shocked. We have to do better, and I'll know that it's happening beyond all the detail of all the rules and regulations when I don't hear that another young person of color has been shot dead. And I know people who a year or a little more ago were simply humiliated. Shouldn't be happening anymore. Just fix it. I'll be with you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
You're welcome.
Thank you, all three of you. And Carla, just check how many more people do we have signed up, please?
Let's see. 15, maybe.
Can I see a show of hands of people here who have not testified who'd like to? So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we have about 9. Okay, if you just read through the list and if your name is called.
Next three are Jennifer Nicholas, Thomas Atteen, and Sarah Ayan Arone. And they'll be followed by Tara Parrish, Lisa Wright, and Adam Murray Millen.
Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Jennifer Nicholas, and I'm really sorry. I haven't eaten since 9:30 a.m., and I've changed my testimony like 700 times because everybody else has been so much more eloquent in what I said. So if I ramble, I apologize. To me, the overriding themes of this meeting and what you guys are trying to do are trust and really ramming this down our throat. We've had very little time to digest what's going on. Mayor, you have promised over and over and over again transparency. You've promised us oversight. You've promised us a lot of things, and you haven't followed through on those things. And you're young in your tenure, we can forgive you for that, but for trying to move so quickly and for us to just have to sit back and take what you guys are saying and at face value, you know, we don't have that trust with you yet. You haven't earned that trust yet from the citizens of this city. I'm sorry, you just haven't. So I don't trust you. I don't know you. I don't know what your intentions are. And to be honest, the promises that you've made, I feel like you haven't followed through with. You promised transparency, and you promised an open process, and you invited community members like the AMAC, and then when they expressed doubts and when they said that they weren't comfortable with some of the things that you were trying to do, you did it anyway. Now you're telling us this is what's going to happen, and you guys are all going to sit here tonight and vote about it, and person after person is coming up here and saying, don't do this. Wait. Let us have a little bit more time to digest this. Let's work out the kinks before this happens.
Ma'am, can I just clarify something? This is an ordinance. This is a first reading. We are not going to vote on the ordinance tonight.
Oh, okay.
And it was published as an ordinance, non-emergency. So it's
I apologize
a first, it's
for
a first
the,
hearing.
For my confusion. You know, I can't speak to what some of the other people have testified here to, but I can speak to what I have personally had happen to me at the hands of the Portland Police Bureau. I was in the kettle on June 4th. I was in the back of the May Day event with my 64-year-old mother. I got pepper sprayed both times. The Portland Police now have pictures of me and my photo identification, and I don't feel safe. I'm a business owner. I am a taxpayer. I'm a concerned citizen. I've repeatedly tried to get a hold of your office, Mayor, and I've gotten the runaround. I myself have put in 2 requests to speak with you and meet with you. I've gotten no response. My husband has put in a request to speak with you, and we've gotten no response. To be honest, Michael Cox is the only person in your office that has been willing to spend any time answering my questions. And you know, he's a spin doctor, and as much as I appreciate him doing that, I don't trust him. And that's the overriding theme of what I have to say tonight is earn our trust. Don't just expect it.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm glad to see you, Mr. Mayor, and the council here. You're working late. My name is Thomas Etienne. I recently became a veteran. I came back to civilian life, took off the uniform. So I'm, you know, familiar with working late. It's part of service. So I thank you for that. So I tried to think of over the past couple days what I might say that's either convincing or persuasive to reflect what others have said here, why it's not a good idea to not listen honestly to what your community is telling you, because they're here and they're telling you. So I came back about a year ago, and I first came into the Army here at the Oregon Army National Guard. I was commissioned at the University of Portland. So from 2006 to 2015, I trained and studied and fought in our wars on terror. And I just wanted to think or represent something from that that may reflect here. So what have I seen in that environment? That we went into areas where we were trying to establish security and gain trust. And it's a difficult thing to do. And we were doing it in an environment where violence was part of the equation. It was very hard to do. And we learned by paying the highest price for years what it takes in order to actually gain the trust of foreign nationals, indigenous communities. And what we finally discovered is that we cannot disregard those populations. We cannot disregard stakeholders. We actually had to find ways to turn enemies into stakeholders. It's a hard thing to do, but it's not impossible. And actually accepting what they tell us for on its face value, the way they're going to explain it to you, you really can't get the community to communicate or operate on your terms. They're going to do it on their own terms every time. And it's just been interesting after coming back here, seeing what's happened here. It's very impressive, all the growth that's happened since I left. But then immediately seeing the homelessness here, knowing some of those people there are veterans as well. And then also seeing this environment that's related directly to this issue is actually fomenting the circumstances for extremism, and why that can't be resolved, why you can't find a way to actually meaningfully interact with the community in such a way that they are actually setting the agenda for how they can actually protect themselves. So the main point that took us years to establish, General Guterres finally, they gave him a shot when we were desperate, is that you have to protect your populace no matter what. We had to shift away from intervention and use of force and going after bad guys endlessly to actually protecting them. And it was a hard thing to do. Maybe we had more resources, infinite amount of defense spending, whatever. But it wouldn't work otherwise. And we did it in that environment. So you should be able to do it here. So I don't think cutting out the community and redefining what your compliance standards are, moving the goalposts closer, is going to work.
Could I just make a comment? Because several people in a row have raised this theme of cutting out the community, squashing the public voice, getting rid of oversight. People have testified, and I'd like to respond. I think that's a reasonable thing to do. You elected me. You need to hear from me as well. First of all, with regard to oversight, it is true that the COAB, the O is for oversight. The A, weirdly enough, was advisory. So it had a conflicted objective from the beginning. And as we interviewed people on the COAB, they made it very clear to us that there was confusion as to what their mission was. And it's great to call it an oversight body, but the reality is the mayor rarely attended. The police were not always able at least in one case, they were not to show up by the then police chief. Members who were well-meaning and were prepared to work hard felt threatened and did not show up and, in fact, resigned, including two chairs in a row. So while it looked great on paper as an oversight board, the reality is they sent recommendations to the city that were all summarily ignored. It became almost irrelevant. Just a sec, Jenny. Despite the best efforts of that board. With regard to shutting out public input, I just want to reiterate something here. We can quibble about it being a public body or not being a public body. I'm fine with that. I have no particular pride of authorship, but this is specifically done so that it will have public engagement at least once a quarter. That is in the document. And the committee itself can choose, if they so choose, to have more input, to have more public engagement processes. So it's at least once a quarter, which, by the way, is consistent with many of other boards and commissions that we have. I've heard testimony tonight about... No, I'm answering a question. I'm not filibustering. I'm your elected mayor, and you need... We're having a conversation here.
Can I ask you a question?
That you don't want to hear.
Can I stop.
Just
get a clarification?
Certainly, Joni, yes.
Why aren't you just trying to fix it? Why aren't you trying to start over with the COAB? Why are you trying to completely scrap it and do
something
else?
This resulted from conversations we had with COAB members. And we did, in fact, this document addresses many of the issues raised by COAB. For example, and I'm just going to tick off the list that I remember off the top of my head. They ask for orientation. They'll get it. They ask for more training. They'll get it. They ask for more permanent staffing. So they're going to get a full-time administrator. They're going to get somebody who helps coordinate the meetings and whatnot.
So why change
it? I'm not even done yet.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get that, why not keep the COAB and just fix the things that you
Well, I believe in many regards this is exactly what we're doing. It requires a timely response from the city, and the people here who are on the COAB will tell you they got virtually no response from the city. That issue gets resolved. So, the police will be required. They will not be able to opt out. They will be required to participate in the public engagement process. So this does not, item for item, square with what Drs. Bethel and Haynes, by the way, people who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, so even knowing they disagree with me, that's why I wanted them here to testify and be heard, because I value their role in this community and I value their opinion. I think we're doing our best to get most of the good advice. Now, my colleagues here, as I said, this isn't lined up, and they've introduce some amendments that address some of the concerns that people have had. So let's see what we get put together here. I respect the difference of opinion, but I just wanted to respond to that because that issue has come up several times, and I felt like I needed to reflect back on your good comments, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I thank you, Mr. Mayor. The only thing I can say on that I would just add is that I don't understand, like, reflecting right here, why any of the need to fix things requires removing that oversight component, which the community seems to think is extremely important.
There's for several reasons. First of all, with regard to the DOJ settlement agreement, you still have the DOJ. They'll be playing their oversight role. You'll still have the COCL. They'll still play an oversight role. And you will still have the judge, who has a very important role in terms of determining our compliance or noncompliance. So you still have that. And by the way, don't forget, you still have me,
right?
And you still have the city council. So I believe there is plenty of oversight worked into this, and we address a lot of the other issues.
I hear you.
And by the way, this committee or commission or whatever you want to call it, they will have the ability to chart their own agenda. And that is very different than what the COAB was offered. The COAB was very prescribed in terms of what issues they could address. So it ain't perfect. We're not all going to agree, but I think this does, in fact, address most of the issues that have been raised.
Well, I've seen where goal lines have been moved closer, and the consequences were devastating. Actually, I had a flashback when I looked at the COCL report, and I saw the little color bars of their assessments of whether the benchmarks have been met for the Portland Police. And I had a flashback to assessments of the security forces in Iraq, Afghanistan. And knowing that those bars could always simply be, every time when we were ready to transfer out to complete a rotation, somehow they all seemed to magically, well, need some improvement, but they met the standard, and we were out of there. And then the next unit came in, and boy, did they discover all the issues immediately again. And in the long run, when those things don't represent reality, those forces, we said that they were, you know, wonderful, they could take over their own security. And years later, Iraq almost fell to an internal enemy. You know, it's a different circumstance than what we're talking about here.
Yeah, but it's a fair admonition, and I see your point. I take it.
Anyway,
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for your testimony and for your service to our country. I really appreciate your perspective. I just wanted to give a point of information that the COCAL is still going to have public meetings quarterly. And where in...
I'm sorry.
Where in the current settlement agreement it says that the COCAL shall report to the COAB, it now says the COCAL will report to the public, and that the COAB and the new commission will jointly go to the quarterly meetings and arrange them together. So that actually is more public oversight, because everybody's going to be allowed, encouraged to do that, rather than there being a designated...
Well, Commissioner Fritz, I'm getting the stink eye from people who have been waiting, so we'll keep moving. I'm sorry, because I was the one who started this ball rolling, but I wanted to comment. I thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah, you're up.
I got used to listening to you talk, so I'm good. There's not much I can say that hasn't been said already. I think Drs. Bethel and Haynes and also Singford were pretty succinct, and also Joanne was pretty clear with her thoughts. So maybe we should pull it out to the PR level, right? You guys know my job is repping Portland in the global marketplace as a livable city. That's what I do day in and day out. Hundreds of people come to see me from around the world because we're known as a model. And one of the things that they come to see is civic engagement. They want to know, how is it that you enable your citizenry to be so engaged to create such a livable place, right? We talk about ONI. We talk about all the ways that our citizens are empowered. We talk about the commissions. We talk about equity. We talk about human rights. And then they come out of their hotel in the morning, look at the cover of the Oregonian or the Tribune, and see another police shooting. They see all the homeless people on the street, and they wonder, why are the elected officials not listening to the people? Where's the actual governance on behalf of the people? Not just a bunch of public testimony, but where is the true oversight of our city, the governing of our city, according to the will of the people? I think the point here is along the lines of what Susan Anderson was talking about with the composting. It was very, very difficult when we tried to switch from weekly garbage pickup to every other week, and people had garbage cans overflowing. It smelled horrible. It was terrible. No one knew what was going on. But we persisted because we knew that there was a better alternative that we had not done before, and we needed to try it. We needed to persist to move the needle forward on the innovations, the civic innovations, that were nothing we had ever done before. And in my business, we have a saying, the greenest building is the one that's already built. We're spending $200 million to fix up the Portland building because from the outside it looks great, and on the inside it barely works. The COAB is the same. Why put all this energy and effort into selling the PPCEEP to the people going through the amendment, whatever, Prosper Portland's the same thing, I can't track, but putting these new wraparounds on everything, trying to sell them to the public instead of actually fixing, like he's saying, not moving the goalposts, but really fixing and having an innovative model that says, we stuck with this. We invested. The failure of the COAB was not its members. It was a failure of investment right out of this building in training, in understanding what those people needed to succeed. It's exactly like when we send a minority student to be on par with a Caucasian student and expect them to win. They were not equipped to succeed. And so I would suggest to you and argue, please do not take Dr. Bethel's advice. Think of it as COAB 1 and COAB 2 and fix the things that are wrong with it. Keep your model, perfect it and make it better, but do not reinvent the wheel. Do not move the goalposts, because I think it's antithetical to what we're trying to accomplish, and I actually think it looks really bad for the city.
Thank you.
The next three are Tara Parrish, Lisa Wright, and Adam Murray Milan. And they'll be followed by Linda Desiree Heligros and Laura Moulton.
Good evening.
Is one of those people missing?
You can start.
Okay. Thank you for taking testimony today. My name is Lisa Wright. I am the co-chair of the Political Action Committee for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, Portland Branch. We have submitted testimony via Joanne earlier, so I'm here to speak to you as a constituent. I want to say I appreciate Commissioner Fritz for staying up late and reading all the documents. I've had several late nights reading all of the documents. And I appreciate Commissioner Udaly being very responsive to the feedback that has come in as we've been moving very quickly through this. But I want to say that as I have read every word of all of those documents and I've listened to all of this testimony, I come back to I think what Sarah was just saying, that I cannot find the reason why you want to not fix the COAB and deal with the problems that were not with the COAB but with the city and with the police department, instead of, you know, coming up with something new. This just does not make any sense. And I fully appreciate the amendments that you guys are putting in to make the structural problems and the, frankly, the embarrassing lack of detail in the Exhibit 4.1 better. But I think the real problem is that you're trying to, you know, remove the independent community oversight, which was put in place for a reason. It was not put in place just, you know, for fun. The other thing I want to talk about is trust. We've heard a lot about trust today. And we have some reasons why this process is not being trusted, and some reasons why individuals are not being trusted. And I'm going to enumerate some of them. You send police and riot gear to peaceful demonstrations by default, including when there were white supremacists that counter-protesters were demonstrating against, and the police were facing the counter-demonstrators, not the white supremacists. You shut down and shut out community members who expressed disagreement with your actions in this room. You have promised public and transparent proceedings for things like the police hiring process and then made those proceedings largely secret. You changed the amount of money that could be approved without city council approval a couple of weeks after the NAACP objected to the over $300,000 RFP for a strategic plan for the police department that doesn't currently have a police chief or has an interim police chief. And I just have one more point, and that's that you remain silent in the face of police violence until, including here in City Hall, until elderly white women are affected. Those are all very real reasons why there is a lack of trust. And that doesn't get to all of them. And I acknowledge that there have been some very difficult situations that y'all have had to deal with, and some very challenging individuals. But you're asking for transparency and, you know, for us to respect the process. And at the same time, there's consistently a reaction to shut things down instead of opening them up. And you are not going to win that way. It's just not going to, it doesn't work with people. If you want to create connection and make a better process with people, you have to open things up. I apologize for going over time.
No worries. Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Tara Parrish with Don't Shoot Portland. I've been sitting here for, you know, about 4 hours listening to a bunch of stuff that makes me really angry. And I'm really disturbed to have heard your analogy likening indictments for murders by police to earthquakes and earthquake preparedness. I can't wait to see the transcripts.
It was actually the risk that I was talking about.
Right, the risk.
The event itself.
Okay. Anyway, again, I see that as police commissioner, your grasp of what's really going on in the Portland Police Bureau is poor. A lot has been said already by people far more qualified than I am. What I do know is that Portland police have murdered 2 young people this year already. I know that yesterday would have been Qantas Hayes' 18th birthday. And again, all I hear, because I come to these a lot, all I hear is provisions for the comfort of the officer and the protection of city liability rather than the citizen affected. Portland police officers should be held to the same standards after murdering a human being as the average citizen is. It really makes me sick. I hear testimony that there hasn't, you know, there's only been a certain amount of feedback. But how is a group of citizens repeatedly blocking TriMet, demanding transparency in the police bureau, not feedback? After I leave here, I'm going to an art exhibit called Stolen Angels. The exhibit is about young people of color who have been killed through white supremacist violence, the majority murdered by Portland police. And I would like to invite everybody, if you can get down there by 8 p.m. The opening reception is at Williamson Night Gallery at 916 Northwest Flanders, and it goes till 8 p.m. It's pretty powerful if you can make it. Regarding the reorganization to attempt to comply with the settlement agreement, it only enforces the racist patriarchal system in place already. You're trying to make yourself king, just like the president. Today I'm here because I want to speak for Christopher Kalonji, Quanis Hayes, and Larnell Bruce. Say their names.
Thank you.
Was there a Adam Murray Milan? Okay, then we'll go with Linda, Desiree Helen Gross, and Laura Multon.
Mayor, can we see a showing of hands?
Who's what about,
and who has not been called, who's on the list? We have one gentleman over here. Who else?
I've got Oscar Guerra-Vera, Martha Balsham.
Yes. Very good. So it looks like we have two more people after this panel here.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for your patience. Good evening.
Starting over here. My name is Desiree Helligers. I'm a longtime member, board member of Peace and Justice Works Portland Cop Watch, faculty with the Collective for Social and Environmental Justice at WSU Vancouver, though I live in Portland. And my comments reflect only my own perspective. So I was deeply disturbed to hear about the proposed changes to the settlement agreement. Quite clearly, the replacement of the COAB, whose primary charge is to provide community oversight of the implementation of the settlement agreement, represents an abandonment of the spirit of accountability and transparency at the heart of the settlement agreement forged with the Department of Justice. The replacement of the 15-member COAB with its mechanism for ensuring broad and diverse community representation with a 5-to-9 member whose primary function is to provide community engagement and which would be handpicked by the mayor would further erode public trust in the office of the mayor, the city council, and the Portland Police Bureau. I ask you, what kind of meaningful community engagement can be fostered by a board that is handpicked exclusively by the mayor and that out of some 24 to 28 meetings a year conducts all but four behind closed doors? For years, we've watched the Portland Police Bureau act with impunity, lethally shooting civilians like Quanis Hayes, unarmed civilians like Quanis Hayes, Kendra James, and Keaton Otis, whose loss at the hands of the Portland police continues to haunt and traumatize the community. The community has spent years arguing, organizing, and agitating for transparency and public accountability from the PPB. Like so many others, I'm also deeply concerned at the prospect of police officers being given a wide window of time and the latitude to try to manufacture false testimony to cover their own tracks. We know that mechanisms exist to wall off administrative investigations by internal affairs from criminal investigations, and that it's as important to promptly interview police officers involved in the lethal use of force as it is to interview civilians involved in incidents that result in loss of life. So I ask that you commit to ensuring that officers are interviewed within 24 hours of officer-involved shootings, including most notably fatal shootings. Finally, I ask that the mayor and every member of the city council ask yourselves whether you want your own actions as elected officials to be guided by the spirit and policies carved out under the Obama DOJ for all its limitations, or whether you want your own political legacy to be one of active collusion with the Trump and Sessions DOJ. The president whose DOJ would eagerly submit to the eliminating of the COAB in favor of a bit of PR and window dressing is the same president who just publicly encouraged police officers to assault people during the process of arresting them by slamming their heads up against squad car windows. So is this the DOJ you want to be aligning yourself with in undermining and weakening the settlement agreement? So the question really is, which side are you on? Because I assure you that we, the public, will definitely remember where you stood on this issue and who you stood with. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for the record, the U.S. attorney who we have been working with through this mediation process was appointed by Barack Obama.
Nevertheless, we know who's in charge of the DOJ right now and what his standards are.
To the settlement agreement, and that's why we're moving forward with this. Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor and Commissioners. It's getting awfully late, so I'm going to just say what other folks...
What's your name, ma'am?
Oh, sorry. Hi, I'm Linda. I am here today as a reasonable community member. I also have participated in COCO and COAP meetings. In particular, I'm aware of the 48-hour law. Some of my language was used in the amendments of that. It's not really a law. It was a protocol, I would say it was, more along the lines of that, and as well as I'm a board member at Sisters of the Road. Today I speak in my own capacity. I'll use I statements as much as I can. My pronoun is queen or anything respectable. Having said all that, I do echo what the reverends have said. I think that's enough for you guys to digest right there. I feel that the amendment to the settlement agreement would engrave our community, which is charged to participate in the accountability process. Picking a few folks isn't what I think is engaging the community at all. I feel that when the community's voice is removed from the table, it is encroaching and hindering the vital transparency that the settlement agreement was forged to encompass the community. So whose voice shall we hear? Accountability is imperative when we're working with public servants. The AMA, I pray that you heed what they are speaking to you and that you use the lenses that truly impact the community at large that you are charged to take care of. And that's all I have to say.
Very well. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for being here so late. I paid for plenty of parking, and I'm pretty sure I have a ticket, so I was wondering if the council would write a note. I'm pretty sure I might have a ticket. Is that you?
Dan is in charge of transportation.
I'll forward that. I'll be quick. I want to thank you all for being here. Thanks to Mayor Wheeler and the council. I am Laura Moulton. I'm an adjunct professor, and I operate a nonprofit called Street Books, a bicycle-powered mobile library that serves people who live outside. In the last week or so, as was previously mentioned, our current president joked about police officers roughing up citizens that they police and kind of bumping them into paddy wagons. And I think this caused a number of police departments across the nation to respond, pushing back against this sentiment, reinforcing a commitment to serve the communities. And it's easy to laugh about or just, you know, hold this at remove and talk about what an egregious, you know, thing this is, decry the president's statements. But it does speak, I think, to a general tone that we see across the United States right now. And in this climate, my hope would be that Portland would be a leader in stepping forward and being a beacon sort of with police accountability, open and transparent in all its dealings. And if the U.S. Department of Justice has declared that we're out of compliance, my hope is that, as has been mentioned, there is broad community oversight and inclusion rather than something small that feels inaccessible to citizens. I've lived in Portland since 1998, and in that time, I've seen a number of Portland citizens die at the hands of police. James Chassie, Kendra James, James Jahir Perez, Keaton Otis, and Aaron Campbell are a few. In some cases, we pay millions of dollars to their families because officers get it wrong. But if we don't have an open public discussion about what it means to get it wrong, how do we improve as a police department and a city? I knew Erin Campbell's grandmother. On the day she lost one grandson to a heart condition, Portland police shot another grandson, Aaron, in the back. He wasn't mentally ill. He was grieving the death that morning of his brother. And after a hostage negotiator talked him outside, Officer Freshour shot him in the back. It's my understanding that Freshour was eventually reinstated to the police force. Maybe there's something updated, but my understanding is he's back. And if that's true, what have we learned 7 years later? If this is the system, what does the idea of 48 hours even mean? What does it matter? And I'll finish. The writer Claudia Rankine has written, because white men can't police their imagination, black men are dying. She says, when white men are shooting black people, some of it is malice and some an out-of-control image of blackness in their minds. Darren Wilson told the jury that he shot Michael Brown because he looked like a, quote, demon. And I don't disbelieve it. Blackness in the white imagination has nothing to do with black people, end quote. My question for the council and for our city as we discuss the terms of these new ordinances is, what will we do to prevent shootings in the first place? What do we need to do to police our own imaginations? Thank you.
Well said. Thank you. Yeah, two more folks who wanted to come on up.
Why don't the last two come on up? If you signed up to speak, come on up.
You will be our final two voices tonight. Thank you.
Hi. For the record, I may please the council. My name is Ethan Harrison. I'm a working class queer person who uses they and them pronouns. It's important to not assume gender, though someone might look like something. We should ask them. I was born and raised in Alabama. And I'm a working class queer, live and work in Irvington, the historic district. They've got some great produce that you can liberate up there. Before my comments, I just wanted to note something that I read on Twitter. It's a screenshot from a conversation with Michael Cox, the mayor's communication director. He said that experience tells us when we have to plan for the possibility that disruptions could require council to move to another room. That room's on the third floor, along with the balconies. It's necessary to keep the balconies closed for that reason. There are overflow rooms for viewing. Everyone will have an opportunity to testify further. He noted that in consultation with and at the recommendation of our facilities and security teams, they made that decision. So I just wanted to note that so you met before and you made plans to exclude the community, and we can't pretend that that's openness, right? I remember a city council where Commissioner Udaly talked about town halls, and I was really inspired by that, right? Like, you get to come up and, like, talk and meet your neighbors and things. So I was wondering, like, how many town halls were held before you put this on the council's agenda? I mean, I live in Irvington, right, as I said, and I thought it was kind of funny but kind of scary. My time hasn't started and stopped, and I'll just go ahead and note that I have 3 minutes on the clock here. And Robert's rules are very dear to my heart. In July, I received a notice on Portland City letterhead, and as a tenant, I thought that that was an eviction notice, because as a tenant, as a renter, I live with that fear every day due to Portland's inadequate laws for the houseless population and the renter class, although we have made strides with relocation assistance, which I'm really looking forward to talking to the commissioners about this fall. So it turns out it was a notice for a change to an apartment building in Irvington, right? Like, it's a historic district, and so the city has to, in compliance, send out these letters to, like, everyone in the neighborhood. And I was like, oh, cool, let's read this. They were going to change some windows in a building. And I got a notice from the city, and I was like, felt really cool. But if we're going to do the same thing for brick and mortar, then we have to do the same thing for people's lives, right? So I just want to know, like, we need to be sending out these similar notices, like, hey, wouldn't you love to come and talk about the Portland police? Granted, it's civic engagement, and you find a lot of times that there are empty meetings, but we should at least try. We should be leveraging the opposite of neighborhood involvement. Like, why wasn't my neighborhood association getting in contact with me? Although I do realize that some of those only meet, like, twice a year, which is interesting. Lastly, I guess, breathing is good. As to the comment about the process with the Department of Justice being closed, I will just note that the public found out about this on a Friday, I think last week, and then it was moved to council's agenda the following week. So if I were the mayor, which I don't think that I would want to be, because I'm not, it just doesn't drive with my politics, my question is just, like, So you had that closed meeting that had to be secret. You had to follow, like, you know, not secret, but you couldn't talk about it. Why then wasn't there a public comment period? Why didn't you go to Willamette Week and be like, got a cool story for you. Portland's mayor, like, much derided in the streets, wants to talk to you about this new cool thing and wants to involve you. To call these meetings sufficient is, we know that's not right, you know? Like, we don't have technically the ability to back and forth talk, right? And when it happens, like, I'm the person over there talking about how you're filibustering, so, like, that's not good. A little self-jab. So, I don't know. I'll close with, you have the capacity to be cordial and congenial, as you've shown with, like, joking with people earlier. Like, we want, laughter is like a fear response, and it's also something that we use to, I don't know, to be human. And I just wanted to quote Grace Lee Boggs, the person who passed away at 100 years old, lifelong Detroiter, has some really great ideas. And we just need to work in service of being more human beings and actually, like, engage in community meaningfully before you develop the rules to develop community involvement bodies. That's where we need to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for your patience.
It's a big responsibility to go last. my name is Martha Balsham, and I'm a retired sociology professor from Portland State, a proud member of the local NAACP, and an intern facilitator, a new facilitator, for the Alternatives to Violence program, but I'm just speaking for myself. Everything I have to say, I think, has already been said, but I would offer my own insights into it. First of all, I'll say that speaking for myself means I'm speaking for an upper middle-class white woman who lives in Southwest Portland. And I feel a visceral anxiety about police that I've never in my life felt before. You know, I've had political anger about these issues, but feeling something visceral is completely different. And I think that it's associated with the stress that our society is under now, and that's the context for everything. And that all of these issues about policing, for multiple reasons, are a real key issue in how our social fabric is going to, you know, evolve, fray, strengthen, change. Because these issues, once they are felt visceral, are consuming. Also, I think that the incidents of people losing their lives are only the tip of the iceberg of the kinds of things that go on between police officers and residents of Portland, even Southwest residents. I'm extremely close to a young man who is a social worker in training. And in his professional job, he saw a Portland police officer escalate a controlled situation into a crisis that involved my young friend, a licensed social worker, and a 10-year-old child who was having a freak out because of mental health issues. It was an issue. It was a situation that was controlled by the social work professionals there, but the incident ended up with the officer putting the licensed social worker and the child together in a double neck hold, if you can imagine that. We're not insulated from those stories, and we're not insulated from the emotional impact of it in Southwest Portland. So I think you have to remember that we're talking about not certain communities, but all of Portland. Can I say a little bit more?
Certainly.
Two major things that I want to add to. First of all, I think that you really can't escape from the fact that this CPSEP is a step backward. It's not the step that we need to take. We desperately need to take, as others have said, that step forward in order to preserve our social feeling of togetherness and what that means to the community, to the whole city. I think it's very important to realize that the body is described in very vague terms. And we certainly must all have had the experience and come to the insight that things that are vaguely described are very easy to torpedo. And I think that I would predict that as written at this moment, even with the very worthy amendments to it, that it'll be an ineffective body. The second and last thing I wanted to talk about is just the question about input. I understand completely how painful it can be to go through, a lot of work with the best of meaning and to come to the belief that, in your mind, this is even going to be a stronger, than the original body. But I think for whatever reason that the input that was gotten is from a very narrow band. And when you have a narrow band of input, you have an incomplete output. And I think that's what you've got here. Narrow in, narrow out. There are obviously people that you need to hear from that you haven't heard from, and you even know who some of those people are. So I would say, I would urge you to remember that the city of Portland has not, because of some of these issues I've talked about, earned the trust of people who have consistently and historically been targeted by violent policing. So please don't act on this now. You have an incomplete proposal to look at.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for your testimony.
Are we going to make any comments? Or
we have the opportunity to bring staff back up if you'd like to ask follow-up questions.
So, Mayor,
we have the opportunity to make comments. Yes.
We may be on the verge of losing a quorum. Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, certainly.
It's been a long day, and there's a lot to absorb, and we're not voting tonight. I suggest that we move. First of all, the proposed amendments that we now have, your staff has very kindly created an integrated document. Have you, Mayor, had a chance to review these amendments?
Yes, and I want to make sure that the proposers have also had a chance. So, Commissioner Fritz, I don't know if you've had a chance to read through yours, and Commissioner Udaly, I think yours are verbatim off of the sheet that you provided us earlier, so those shouldn't be problematic.
And Nicole Grant has got all of these entirely right.
This document looks like a complete set of amendments we've been offered. Mayor, do you accept these amendments?
I accept these amendments, and if there is no objection, what I'd like to do is call the question on the amendments and move them forward.
So I propose, Mayor, we do two votes. One on Udaly amendments as a package, and second on Fritz amendments as a package.
Any
and
objections?
We adopt those.
There's not anybody here, so that's just public objection.
I didn't think we were going to vote on the amendments tonight.
Here's what we can do. We can carry the amendments forward as part of the package.
Carry them forward. Oh, wait. Sorry, I cut you off. Carry them forward.
That's fine.
The one advantage. If we adopt the amendments now and there's consensus around the amendments, we still have all the flexibility about how we want to handle this matter going forward. But if these amendments are acceptable to the council, I see no reason not to adopt them. This matter does not go to next week for a vote. The mayor is going to give additional time for us to consider these and to take and to
okay.
hear from the public. But I have another amendment I may bring, but I'm not prepared to offer it tonight other than to foreshadow that I might bring it. So I think we should adopt these as a matter of good process since they are on the table. But that does not preclude the council from offering additional amendments if that's their desire at a future hearing.
All right.
Good.
So I would move Udaly amendments 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as a package.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to move Udaly amendments 1 through 5. And could you make a similar motion, please, for Fritz?
And I move Fritz Amendments 1 through 12 as a package.
I second that.
We have a motion to move Fritz Amendments 1 through 12 by Commissioner Fritz and a second by Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion on the amendments before
just
we call the roll,
Commissioner Fritz? As a point of information, did Commissioner Saltzman say he's left for the night, or is he coming back?
I think, well, he took his glasses, so he may have left.
Okay, thank you.
Please call the roll on Udaly Amendments 1 through 5.
Udaly.
Well, I guess I'm just going to take this opportunity to thank everyone who has made it through this hearing with us. It was a remarkably civil, productive, informative, he's making faces at me over there, meeting compared to many, many, many of the sessions that I have been sitting up here for. I've attempted to respond to concerns that were expressed by community members before this hearing through my five amendments. I may have a couple more to introduce, and I have some serious concerns to mull over in the meantime. We're going to be looking at the 48-hour ceiling and whether or not we can lower that to 24. I also feel the need to express on the record that despite the fact that we've included the excerpt report from Kathleen Sadat, former chair of the COAB, she does not actually support these amendments. And she said that she submitted testimony by email to us, but unfortunately it didn't come through. And otherwise, everyone up here would be aware of that. So I'm going to vote aye on my own amendments, but there may be lots more to come. Aye.
Fritz.
Yeah, thank you to everybody who's still here and to everybody who participated in this hearing. It has been a remarkably constructive and informative hearing. Thank you, Commissioner Daly, for these amendments. I want to state very clearly, I am very committed to continuing to be extremely involved in the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement. Whether the language says so or not, the answer is try to keep me away, and that is not happening. As a retired registered nurse who worked for 22 years in psychiatry at Oregon Health and Sciences University, I didn't expect that I was going to get to work on that crucial issue when I came to city government, and I will continue to seize that opportunity. I want to particularly thank Christina Nieves on my staff, who attended almost every meeting of the Community Oversight Advisory Board, every meeting with the the Albino Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, who unfortunately is on vacation this week. So thank you to Nicole Grant for pinch hitting and getting my amendments into some semblance of order. We are committed to making sure that this works. And I just wanted to explain that part of the urgency is that we don't know how much longer U.S. Attorney Billy Williams will be in his position. And we know that he's committed to this. We doubt that somebody following him, being appointed by the current administration in D.C., would be as thoughtful and as determined as he has been. So that's part of the urgency to get this agreed too soon. It would, whenever we get to it, it will go to a fairness hearing with Judge Simon. I know the mayor has many other things he wants to get on the record as well, so this is just an interim phase here. I particularly appreciated Ethan Harrison's comments and your honesty in telling us that we hadn't started the clock. I actually hadn't noticed because I thought your testimony was especially elegant. What we are trying to do, in fact, is to establish procedures for community engagement. So it's really going to be a community engagement oversight committee or commission. The question is how to get that done in a way that inspires trust and continues to respond to community concerns. And I think there's many things in the settlement agreement still that will require that. So thank you very much, everybody who's stayed with us tonight. Aye.
Fish?
Well, I want to join in my colleagues in thanking everyone who joined us today over the last 6 hours.
Time's up. Sorry.
Carla's now. Carla's having fun.
Best game in town.
Carla's having fun. And actually, we're very grateful for. Can we suspend the rules and thank Carla for the back-to-back days?
Carla.
We have the best council clerk in America, and we're grateful for her. I think these amendments strengthen the proposal that's been put forth. I also have no doubt that my colleagues are deeply committed to the difficult work, very difficult work, of police reform and accountability. I thank